Good day, and welcome to the Immunic Therapeutics IMU-838 and multiple sclerosis conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note this event is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Jessica Breu. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jason. I also would like to welcome you to Immunic's conference call and webcast today to discuss our press release issued this morning to announce FDA clearance to begin with our phase III ENSURE studies of IMU-838 in relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis and our phase II CALIPER study of IMU-838 in progressive multiple sclerosis. My name is Jessica Breu, Head of Investor Relations and Communications at Immunic. Speaking on today's call are Dr. Daniel Vitt, our CEO and President, and Dr. Andreas Mühlbach, our Chief Medical Officer. Before we begin, as always, I would like to remind you that this presentation may contain forward-looking statements. Such statements can be identified by words such as may, will, expect, anticipate, estimate, or words with a similar meaning, and such statements involve a number of risks and uncertainties that could cause Immunic's actual results to differ materially from those discussed here. Please note that these forward-looking statements reflect Immunic's opinion only as of the date of this presentation, and it undertakes no obligation to revise or publicly release the results of any revision to these forward-looking statements in light of new information or future events. Please refer to Immunic's SEC filings for a more detailed description of the risk factors that may affect Immunic's results and these forward-looking statements. I would now like to turn the call over to our CEO and President, Dr. Daniel Vitt.
Yeah. Thank you, Jessica, for the kind introduction. Yeah, this is an important day for Immunic, and I'm happy to have you all here on the call today. At Immunic, we are developing a pipeline of selective oral drugs aimed at offering patients with chronic inflammatory and autoimmune diseases new and clinically meaningful treatment options. We're currently actively developing three clinical stage products. IMU-838, our lead molecule, now starting phase III clinical development in multiple sclerosis. Second molecule, IMU-935, which is an orally available inhibitor of IL-17 secretion targeting RORγt gamma T, currently in clinical phase I testing. The third molecule, IMU-856, a molecule targeting a new mode of action aiming for restoration of the intestinal barrier function without impairing the immune system. Today, we would like to highlight IMU-838 and share with you exciting news specifically on our way forward and in the indication of relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis and progressive multiple sclerosis. IMU-838 is intended to be the once-daily medication for MS patients with a well-balanced combination of favorable safety and convenience profile with a robust clinical activity. IMU-838 is aiming to offer substantial benefits for patients and for prescribing neurologists, with noticeable efficacy and potential to prevent and/or delay disability worsening, outstanding safety profile of an oral drug without adverse events disturbing quality of life, no or low PML risk, long treatment duration through less risk for discontinuation and high patient compliance, broad applicability, easy on and off dosing, few monitoring requirements, and no black box warning for hepatotoxicity. With these goals, I'd like to hand over to my colleague and Chief Medical Officer, Andreas Mühlbach, who would like to give you more insight on our plans going forward in MS.
Thank you, Daniel. I would like to give you some details now about the integrated clinical development programs in relapsing and progressive MS. Our phase III program in relapsing MS consists of twin studies called ENSURE-1 and ENSURE-2. Both are identical in its design, including using placebo control, and have an overlap in countries, which is a prerequisite for potential pooling of data. As indicated from previous publications of results from cohorts 1 and 2 of the phase II study of IMU-838, the dose of 30 mg once daily IMU-838 is considered the appropriate dose for further development in relapsing MS. This phase 3 program is intended to be a simple path to regulatory approvals. Concurrently to the phase 3 program in relapsing MS, Immunic has decided to perform a relatively large phase 2 study in progressive MS called Caliper, based on analysis of the non-relapsing subpopulation in the phase 2 trial, including the data on the biomarker neurofilament light chain. We believe that a dose of 45 milligrams IMU-838 once daily is appropriate for progressive MS. The objective of this study is to complement the phase 3 program in relapsing MS with more comprehensive data on brain atrophy and disability worsening that would provide a differentiated profile of IMU-838 and highlight the strength of this mechanism of action. Immunic considers this an integrated development program to combine a simple path to regulatory approval and providing additional data to potentially provide an attractive and differentiated profile of IMU-838 for MS patients and neurologists. I would like to initially highlight for you some more details about the ENSURE Phase 3 program in relapsing MS. The FDA has now cleared our investigational new drug application for the ENSURE-1 study, and Immunic may proceed to start this trial. The dosing of the first patient in this trial is still expected in the second half of this year. We have previously communicated that the FDA, for resource reasons, had declined our requested end-of-phase 2 meeting. This created a quite unusual path to the phase 3 program for Immunic's clinical and regulatory team. And the Immunic team is very excited to have received this IND clearance now in this fashion. The Immunic team is very delighted that Bob Fox of Cleveland Clinic, a well-recognized and very experienced trialist in multiple sclerosis, will serve as the coordinating investigator for the ENSURE program. This program will enroll approximately 1,050 adult patients with relapsing MS disease in each of the twin trials. This program will be run in a wide range of countries to allow for efficient enrollment and will also include sites in the U.S. Both identical ENSURE trials will be run concurrently with some overlapping countries. A 72-week main treatment period will be used for which patients are randomized one-to-one to either placebo or IMU-838. After several rounds of discussions with regulators and clinical experts, placebo control was selected as the cleanest scientific control to show proof of efficacy and to underline IMU-838's safety and tolerability profile. This design also allows a straightforward and simple approach from the regulatory and scientific perspective. Based on feasibility already performed and executed in a range of expected high enrollment countries, and based on very recent trial examples, the Immunic team believes that it can efficiently recruit this placebo-controlled phase 3 program. Both ENSURE studies have identical designs so that the studies can replicate and independently confirm its primary outcomes as required by regulatory guidances. The studies will employ a relapse-related primary endpoint defined as time to first relapse. Given the assumptions of expected relapse rate in a 72-week follow-up period, this is a more efficient relapse-related endpoint. The clinically important key secondary endpoint of confirmed disability worsening will be assessed in a pre-planned pooled analysis of both twin ENSURE studies, given that such disability events are rather rare as compared to relapse events in MS patients. The phase 3 program will provide combined safety data in approximately 2,100 MS patients. Regulators at EMA and FDA have generally endorsed this design and endpoint, and the FDA has now provided the May proceed letter for the ENSURE-1 study. In this ENSURE study, patients will be screened and will, if found to be eligible, randomized to 72 weeks, roughly 15 months, of double-blind treatment of either 30 milligram IMU-838 once daily or placebo. During this main treatment period, patients will be regularly checked for neurological status and the potential presence of relapse and or disability worsening. In addition, repeated MRI examinations will be performed. Patients who have a confirmed MS disease event or who finish the 72-week follow-up period have the option to enter a long-term open-label extension treatment. This will allow Immunic to capture long-term safety data and provide patients with an attractive long-term treatment option in a placebo-controlled trial. The study was powered using an event-based sample size calculation, meaning that the progress of this trial is measured by relapse events. The number of patients required to achieve these events in a 72-week follow-up period was based on powering assumption as well as the expected distribution of relapse events between the treatment arms. Both ENSURE studies will perform an unblinded interim analysis when approximately half of the intended events have occurred. There is no intention for a formal futility analysis. Rather, the interim analysis intended to inform an independent data review committee about the distribution of events between treatment arms and ensure that sufficient events will be available before the study is unblinded for final analysis. This interim analysis will inform Immunic of any required potential sample size adjustment. In summary, what I would have shown you is that we have designed this phase 3 development program to, on one hand, ensure a simple path to regulatory approval, while on the other hand, provide potentially differentiated data based on safety, efficacy, and neuroprotective properties of IMU-838. We believe that it was important that the phase 3 program primarily ensures a simple and straightforward way to approval that is endorsed by discussions with regulators, and separate this from clinical data important for potential differentiation positioning in future clinical use. The supportive phase 2 trial in a different MS population, patients with different forms of progressive MS, will therefore be intended to corroborate the neuroprotective potential of IMU-838 and highlights the strength of this class of medications. So let's now start to discuss some details of the phase 2 study in progressive MS and the rationale of the phase 2 study, which is considered supportive to our phase 3 program in relapsing MS. In general, progressive forms of MS are characterized by accrual of further disability in the absence of relapse events. There are MS patients where the disease never has a relapsing phase and the disability worsening occurs from the outset of the disease. These patients are diagnosed with primary progressive MS. Most patients, however, start with a relapsing phase of the disease and only later then become steadily progressive, although no more relapses occur. These patients are then diagnosed with secondary progressive MS or SPMS. SPMS patients can then further categorize into those with activity, mostly seen as MRI lesions, or without activity. All these forms of progressive MS will be included in the CALIPER trial of Immunic. As in our phase 3 program of IMU-838 in relapsing patients, we are very happy that Bob Fox, our Cleveland Clinic, has accepted again to be the coordinating investigator for this program in progressive MS. We have included the shown quote here in our press release. This quote summarizes the assessment of the importance of the steady disability progression as the main concern for neurologists for their patients, both in relapsing as well as in progressive MS patients. This accrual of disability, independent of relapses or other disease activity, diminishes the quality of life of patients, in particular, their mobility. It is not yet well understood what triggers this process, as most MS medications focus on anti-inflammatory activity and the prevention of relapses. We believe that any class of MS medication that is able to slow the progression of MS, in addition to an effect on relapses, would be well endorsed by patients and neurologists. Although not yet fully understood what drives this progression, there are a few hypotheses about the antiviral activities of these class of drugs. The available DHODH inhibitor teriflunomide has shown some interesting and noteworthy results regarding suppression of disease progression. In its comparative study against dimethyl fumarate, one of the major oral drugs in MS, teriflunomide showed a clear and statistically significant advantage regarding brain atrophy. This commercially available DHODH inhibitor seems to prevent brain volume shrinkage better than a standard MS drug. In previous phase 3 trials, teriflunomide also demonstrated a clear effect in slowing disability progression versus placebo, another important measure of disease progression in MS. IMU-838 in its phase 2 trial in relapsed and remitting patients has provided a clear signal on neurofilament, the best available biomarker of damage to axons. Axons are the structure of nerve cells that connect nerve cells to each other for signal transduction. It is known that in an autoimmune disease such as MS, the immune system attacks and destroys axons, leading to an increase of neurofilament in blood, which is one of the proteins resulting from axonal damage. IMU-838 demonstrated a strong and dose-dependent decrease of neurofilament, thus providing evidence of protecting neurons. In contrast, patients on placebo treatment saw an increase in neurofilament up to week 24, the last time point of the blinded treatment phase in phase 2. The FDA has already cleared our investigational new drug application for this CALIPER study, and Immunic will now proceed to start this trial. The dosing of the first patient in this trial is expected in the second half of this year. We expect to include a total of 450 patients with different forms of progressive MS in this trial, and will have sites in North America as well as Western, Central, and Eastern Europe. Based on the results in phase 2 of relapsing remitting MS patients, in particular of the non-relapsing population in this trial, we believe that 45 milligrams IMU-838, the highest dose investigated in MS so far, should be further studied in progressive MS. Patients will be randomized 1-to-1 to IMU-838 or placebo for a double-blind treatment period of 120 weeks. An interim analysis of results regarding neurofilament light chain is pre-planned as an essential part of this trial. Standard inclusion and exclusion criteria for patients with different forms of progressive MS are being applied. The study will utilize an MRI-based primary endpoint. Progressive forms of MS are all categorized by an accelerated loss of brain tissues, which can be monitored by imaging. The primary endpoint, therefore, is an annualized rate of percent volume change. For this reason, serial MRI examinations are done during the double-blind treatment period to evaluate the decline of brain volume during IMU-838 treatment as compared to placebo. Brain atrophy is a known image-based endpoint correlated to accumulation of neurological disability. This endpoint provides a surrogate marker to demonstrate the protection of brain volume by IMU-838 and allows the observation of this endpoint for different subpopulations of progressive MS. Key secondary endpoints include a different methodology of monitoring whole brain atrophy that was used successfully in some other trials of progressive MS, and the clinical endpoint of disability worsening. As half of the patients switched from placebo in the blinded treatment period to active treatment in the open label extension period, imaging is also included in this optional part of the trial. This may provide a different assessment of the effect of IMU-838 versus placebo. The CALIPER study is deliberately run in parallel with and to complement the phase 3 program in relapsing MS. This phase 2 study is designed to corroborate the neuroprotective potential of IMU-838 as exemplified by brain atrophy and disability worsening in a non-relapsing but steadily progressing patient population. Immunic believes that the data from this CALIPER trial, together with strong safety and efficacy data from the phase 3 program, may allow for a meaningful clinical differentiation and attractive commercial positioning in the oral MS market. So I would then hand back to you, Daniel.
Thank you, Andreas, for the exciting introduction and overview of our clinical plans going forward. Just to summarize, IMU-838 is designed to be an easy-to-use, uniquely safe, well-tolerated and efficacious MS treatment option. But let's have a little look on the current treatment market. The MS market in 2020 exceeded $23 billion, but still needs a robust anti-inflammatory with additional neuroprotective properties, a safe and well-tolerated oral drug allowing patients to maintain their normal quality of life, and a solution particular for elderly, for early diagnosed patients who need an easy-to-use base medication. An important part of the UTMS market are currently oral therapies. In 2020, these therapies had a sales volume of more than $10 billion. We believe that a successful MS therapy requires efficacy, safety, and tolerability, specifically because MS is a lifelong disease requiring decades of therapy and typically diagnosed in younger adults, majority being women. One of the key goals of therapies in preventing disability worsening as much as long as possible. But this should be done without problematic side effects which may have substantial negative impact on patients' quality of life. Another aspect is that patients would prefer treatments which not have health risks, including increased risk of cancer, infection risk, PML risk, cardiovascular risk, and liver risk. Absence of the need of significant monitoring would also be beneficial for patients and for doctors. Existing first-line and oral MS drugs leave much to be desired. Basically, all of these currently used drugs or therapies have some substantial weaknesses despite the benefit they offer for patients. This clearly leaves room for improved new therapies. Strong phase 2 data of IMU-828 in RMS supports desired product target profile. In last August, we published clinical phase 2 data for IMU-828 in RMS patients treated with either placebo or active drug at 30 or 45 milligram dose strength. The study met the primary endpoint and key secondary endpoint with high significance levels. We've seen suppression of MRI lesions by 17 and 62% respectively in this trial. And as Andreas has shown earlier in this presentation, we've also seen positive signals on annualized relapse rate, time to relapse, unconfirmed disability, and expanded disability status scale, EDSS. What we believe is important is that we've seen a quite robust decrease in gym movement light chain, which provides evidence of potential neuroprotective activity of IMU-828. IMU-828 also provides further evidence of having potential best-in-class safety and tolerability properties. Administration of IMU-828 was observed to be well safe and well tolerated, with very low rate of treatment discontinuations, even lower than in the placebo group, indicated an encouraging combination of tolerability and efficacy, and also no signals for hepatotoxicity or infections, no liver or kidney events, and no hematuria have been observed, suggest less need of intensified monitoring. If we have a look on the safety profile of IMU-828 and put this in the context of data shown for other oral drugs used for treating MS, we believe IMU-828 safety is absolutely unique. In a recently published study called the DMT Switching in Multiple Sclerosis performed by Spherix, we revealed that IMU-828 is already viewed as one of the most attractive DMTs in development by physicians interviewed in that study. For IMU-828 in rep-submitting MS, full prescription cover seems to be achievable at attractive pricing range. We engage a consulting firm, MME, to investigate coverage and optimal pricing range by performing interviews with leading U.S. insurers. Given the current profile, coverage is not expected to be on the one hand sensitive to IMU-828 pricing despite the presence of generics, and full prescription coverage by payers seems to be achievable for IMU-828 at an attractive pricing range between $50,000 and $60,000 annual treatment cost in US dollars, independent of future generic pricing. So let me summarize our path forward for INU-828 in multiple sclerosis. INU-828 is targeted to be the easy-to-use approach for patients with multiple sclerosis and intended to be the once-daily medication for MS patients with a well-balanced combination of favorable safety and convenience profile with robust clinical activity. The FDA clearance now allows initiation of INU-828 Phase 3 ENSURE studies in RMS and the Phase 2 CALIPER study in PMS. Phase 3 ENSURE program in RMS comprises twin studies evaluating efficacy, safety, and tolerability of INU-828 versus placebo, intended to provide straightforward paths to regulatory approval. The ENSURE studies are supported by the Phase 2 CALIPER trial in PMS patients, which is designed to corroborate INU-828's neuroprotective potential and to support differentiated profile. Both ENSURE and CALIPER expected to begin in the second half of this year. And with this, I would like to hand over to Jason, the operator, to take your questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we'll pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from Yasmeen Rahimi from Piper Sandler. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Congrats on the great updates and all the color. I have a number of questions for you. Maybe the first place to start off would be to really drill down on the inclusion criteria into the ENHANCE study. Can you provide, you know, how many minimum relapse rates would be required to be eligible for the study? What is the EDSS minimum score to be eligible? Second question is, can you walk us through the hierarchy of powering for some of the key secondary endpoints and which of the key secondary endpoints have to be met for regulatory approval? And then I have two quick follow-ups.
Hi, Yasmeen. Thanks for the question. This is Andreas. So these are the standard inclusion criteria for relapsing MS studies that require one relapse in the last year or two relapses in the last 2 years. So this is, I think, what has been used consistently for other studies in relapsing MS as well. And the theme is true that, and we actually had it on the slide, you probably missed it a little bit because I didn't go into detail there, but you can see in the slides that we allow an EDSS score at screening between 0 and 5.5, which is also kind of standard. So we do allow relatively de novo patients as well as patients who are more advanced in their disease in this trial. And then hopefully I have addressed all questions. Did I miss anything, Yasmeen?
No, that's good. Then maybe the hierarchy of key secondary endpoints that you powered
for.
You need to meet for approval.
Did you ask about the CALIPER study or is it still the ENSURE study?
This is for the ENSURE, with both ENSURE studies, please.
Okay. So I think the ENSURE study, I think the, in regulatory terms, rather than maybe in terms of marketability, I think you have to meet the primary endpoint, which is time to first relapse. And we have other key secondary endpoints that we may not have to hit, but we want to hit, because I think it provides a more broader action or that this drug has beyond the primary endpoint on relapse, has also an effect on other endpoints. Yes, and we highlighted, I think was also on the slide a little bit, on one of the slides, that we have all of the key secondary endpoints that are being used in this trial, which includes atrophy, which includes disability worsening. It includes cognition, and also it includes T2 lesion load. This is an MRI endpoint. There is no particular hierarchy. This is a more sophisticated assessment network analysis raising your key secondary endpoints. It's hard to explain on the call, even for me. Hard to understand.
Thank you, Andreas. Maybe another question that is just to kind of help us orient it. How long historically we have seen enrollment, how long would be an enrollment time window for both of the studies? Like, when would be the earliest to expect top line data? And then I have a follow-up question on the CALIBER study.
So I think the kind of on our slide 6, these slides, these arrows were kind of had a time scale, but which is depending basically on a 18 to 20 month enrollment period that we have thought that we need to enroll based on our feasibility that we have done in some of the high enrollment countries and given some of the very recent data, very recent trials that have used placebo controls in the same countries. So that's what we believe. I think the readout of the study could be available basically at the end of 2024.
Thank you, Andreas. And then one last question on CALIBER, if I may ask, and I'll jump back into the queue. It's like, can you help us understand what magnitude change in neurofilament is actually correlated with the brain volume, the key primary endpoint in CALIBER? Just can you orient us towards that data point? That would be helpful.
I think that's a very good question, Yasmin. To be quite honest, I don't think there's a very specific correlation or correlative study that's been done between neurofilament and brain atrophy, or what volume you lose and how this is reflected in neurofilament. And the reason is more so that these brain atrophy studies, they're usually quite long, as you can see here from this trial, where we have a 120-week follow-up period, because brain atrophy is also something that is steady, but, of course, the magnitude is relatively low, so it's 0.5% to 0.8% of the brain volume that you lose every year on an annualized basis. So to detect this in MRI, you need this longer period. Therefore, it's not as easy to correlate this with neurofilament. So I'm not aware, and maybe I'm wrong, as usual, but I think neurofilament usually has been correlated to the anti-inflammatory readouts like MRI lesions, for example. And I think we have also, I think, communicated that in our phase 2 trial, we saw a correlation between the number of MRI lesions seen and the neurofilament levels. However, I think, and that's also I hinted at that here in the presentation, that we had specifically looked at the non-relapsing, non-active population in the phase 2 trial. And there, I think we saw that it seems like that increasing the dose to 45 milligram really is important for this non-relapsing population. So, and this is as much as I can answer this, basically, from the data that I know and understand.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
The next question comes from Gobind Singh from JMP. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, everyone, and congrats on your progress. Just maybe two or three questions from us. So is it was pretty remarkable. It was pretty interesting to see the regulatory feedback on the neurofilament light chain as an interim endpoint in the CALIBER study. So I was wondering if you could just comment about that in itself. It seems like that might even be the first time we're seeing neurofilament light chains as any kind of endpoint. And then how should we view read-through from neurofilament level data from your drug in RRMS to progressive MS? And then one follow-up on Ensure, please.
Yeah. Hi, Gobind. Thanks for the question. So I think, first of all, I think in terms of neurofilament and secondary progressive or progressive in general, there are some data that I think there was one data point on progressive MS and neurofilament that actually showed an increase of neurofilament in a population that is that has progressive MS. So you're absolutely right. I think that the neurofilament, for the reasons that I just explained to Yasmin, I think is we don't have as many data as we have in relapsing MS. However, I think this is also, neurofilament is not a primary or key secondary endpoint of the CALIPER study. I think we were looking for a way to get an interim look at how the study is going with an interim analysis and get an indication also in terms of the different subpopulation of progressive MS and how they react to IMU-838 treatment in terms of neurofilaments before the readouts of the CALIPER study. We thought that this is gives a good indication in terms of also the distribution of the different types and forms of the progressive MS patients to be included and maybe adjusted accordingly. I think the interim analysis allows us to adjust a little bit the different forms, because one of the, like I said, we include all the three forms of progressive MS, and it would be good to, I think, have a good understanding where we see the treatment effect within these different forms of progressive MS and be able to steer this a little bit for the rest of the trial. Then I've forgotten your first question since I answered so long the second. So this is happening to me all the time.
No, it's okay. Yeah, and I guess that answers my questions there, I guess. So for the interim phase 3 ENSURE trial that you mentioned, just remind us, is that blinded or is that unblinded? And also just regarding the overall sites that you guys are going to be using for the phase 3 and for the new phase 2 CALIPER, how much of an overlap are there, if any, with the previous phase 2 trial?
Yes, so first of all, both of the interim analyses of the ENSURE trials and also the CALIPER is unblinded. So, but there will be an unblinded IDMC that gets these data. For the ENSURE trials, the interim analysis, this will not evaluate the primary endpoint of the study. This will evaluate the number of events and looks at the distribution between of events, of relapse events between the treatment arms and basically recalculates how many patients you need to enroll. So this has a little bit to do with the way we have planned the study. We didn't plan the study with a fixed patient number. We planned it with a fixed relapse number, event number, which I think is the right way to do it for this trial. Because really, if you're looking at a relapse endpoint, you want to ensure that you have enough relapses. So it's similar to these vaccination trials now with COVID-19 vaccines, they will really look at events. So this is very similar here. And the number of events that you need is of course, depends a little bit on the distribution between the treatment arms is to achieve the statistical power. And this can be adjusted in this interim analysis. So, of course, we don't, as a company or as a medical person, I'm not unblinded, so I don't know what the distribution will be, but the IDMC will then recommend to include less or more patients in this trial and adjust the sample size accordingly so that with the distribution of relapse events that you can adjust the sample size accordingly and make sure that at the end of the ENSURE trial, in the main analysis, that we have enough events to really have a statistical power in the study. So that's just an assurance of statistical power in the study.
Great. And then the overlap
The overlap. Yes. So the phase two, we had four countries, all Eastern European, in the phase two study in relapsing MS that did be reported last year, and almost all of these sites will participate in the phase 3 study because I think they have experience with IMU-838. They have seen the safety. They have seen very good enrollment. Yes, remember, we have recruited this phase 2 study in, I think, like 8.5 months over the summer, actually. And so they are quite supportive of this phase 3 program, and they will participate in the phase 3 program. But the phase 3 program has a lot of different of new countries that we've never been in to ensure that we really have an efficient way of recruiting basically 2,100 patients so that there will be a lot more countries than we had before. But the four core countries are still part of it. And then you ask about all the overlap between ENSURE and CALIPER. We actually kept it to some sort of minimum, because there's also, when you look at the inclusion criteria, we want to make sure that they don't interfere with each other, and a certain study only gets patients that are not eligible for the other, that, which is usually a little bit the danger in running basically two different patient populations that kind of overlap a little bit. So we deliberately, I think, kept Caliper and Ensure a little bit different, although there's some overlap. And then Caliper also, because you have really very few treatment options that are approved for these progressive forms of MS, we're actually able to go to some of the, for example, Central and Western European countries, or to other countries in North America that were, I think, running the Ensure trials is probably more difficult because of the placebo control in relapsing MS.
Thank you. Very helpful. Congrats again.
Thank you,
again. Oops, sorry. Again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Thomas Smith from SVB Leerink. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking the questions, and congrats on the progress. A couple on our end, I guess, first on the Ensure program, maybe to follow up on the last question, can you talk about your expected split of recruitment between these various geographies, you know, U.S., Eastern Europe, Latin America, and India? And then I guess talk a little bit about plans to enroll patients in the U.S., you know, using the placebo-controlled design here.
Yes, I think, thanks, Tom, for this is a question that really has engaged us for at least the last year, when the regulators steered us in the direction of placebo control, and how to, and that was really, I think, very dedicated work on our side to make sure that we are certain that we can enroll these patients and recruit these patients in a very efficient manner in a placebo-controlled study in relapsing MS. So I think traditionally in such study design, the focus would be on Eastern Europe, where I think because of the resource restrictions there, I think it has been shown also very recently that you can very efficiently have actually relatively long-term placebo-controlled study run in relapsing MS. However, I think we wanted to make sure that we do not fully depend on just Eastern Europe, that we expand this. And so we have found, like you outlined, for example, we have some Latin American countries, some other countries like India, like Central European countries, where this is possible to be done. And we actually, like I also highlighted here, we had done some feasibility, including some trial balloons in terms of with ethics committees in some of these countries to make sure that they are accepting this design. And we have put in some, of course, some measures that makes this a very ethical study design for these countries and for these patients. And we have not seen so far any resistance in these countries. So I think we are quite happy about the response that we've seen so far. And then you also had a question about the U.S. Yes, you can run the insurance trials in the U.S. as well. There is at least one large placebo-controlled study with a long placebo follow-up period already currently ongoing in the U.S. This is probably a subset of the MS centers in the U.S. This may not be all of the U.S. sites that they will not participate, but there's a good set of U.S. sites that actually is currently participating and will participate in placebo-controlled trials, even in relapsing MS.
Okay, got it. And then on the interim analysis that's planned within the Ensure program, appreciate the earlier color, and it sounds like it'll be used mainly to adjust the population size. But I just want to confirm, are there any trial stopping criteria that are being implemented in that interim analysis?
I think not formally. Yeah, so there's no formal, and that also actually was what the regulators wanted, a no formal futility analysis. Of course, at some point, if the sample size becomes unmanageable, I think you certainly have to make a decision whether you want to still execute that trial. But I think given our phase two results, especially also in a small study with only 24-week follow-up, to see a very clear signal on relapse activity already, like we have seen with, I think it was 43% relapse reduction. I think the percentage, I think, given the low numbers of relapse events, you have to be careful. But I think it was a very clear signal for both doses there versus placebo already in the phase two trial. We believe that we have also planned this, and as you saw this, we planned it with a hazard ratio of 0.67, which is given our phase two results, given the MRI lesion reduction, given the relapse reduction that is seen in phase two, I would consider quite conservative. I think we believe that there's a very little chance that we're discussing futility. I think we want to use this interim analysis to really make sure that you're on the right path to readout, that we have the ability to adjust the study in terms of sample size one way or the other, and really feel much more comfortable about the final analysis than at the end of the ENSURE studies. And that's the only reason why we put this in, because I think this isn't any big investment. You want to have some assurance that you're on the right path and that you're not missing the endpoint because you missed 10 events or something like that. I think that's really what we would like to do with this interim analysis.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. And then just on the caliper study, I guess given the size and the expected duration, it seems like you expect to have data available from that study before the ENSURE program data become available. I guess can you talk to any potential to include that data set? Is there any pathway to include that data set in the label as you start to think about potential to differentiate from other oral alternatives?
So I think this is the typical answer from Biotech or Pharma would be, of course, this is a phase two study, so this will not be included in the indication line. Yes, so we won't get a label for progressive MS as an indication. However, I think we do measure brain atrophy in ENSURE. We do measure disability worsening in ENSURE. And if we have a corroboration of these effects in the progressive MS population, which is considered maybe even more difficult to treat than the relapsing population, I think definitely this will be included in some of the statements in the clinical trial results section of the SPMC. And I think it also allows usually the pharma companies or biotech companies who market this, or us when we market it, to really talk about the results in this progressive population as well, and also have some more discussions about these non-relapse related endpoints. We believe that the development of MS drugs or relapsing MS drug has focused very much on the effect of relapse, whereas the strength of this class of drugs, DHODH inhibitors, really is more on the brain atrophy, on the disability worsening, on the progression part. And this is shown in the teriflunomide data in different trials, and we also the previous trials that use teriflunomide as a comparator, actually in relapsing MS, have shown that you can beat teriflunomide on relapses. However, for example, even in the ofatumumab study, they could not beat it on brain atrophy, and quite the opposite. So I think that's what we would like to highlight here, that the strength of this class of drugs is somewhere else than relapse, and it's sometimes hard to do in the regulatory pivotal studies that focus so much because of the regulatory guidances on relapse activity. So I think it will end up somewhere in the SMPC, not in the indication, but also I think, as you know, these papers on these studies and outcome of these studies, and given that there is a little bit of a grayish area when a patient moves from relapsing remitting MS to active secondary progressive MS, it's sometimes very difficult to have a very hard line when one finishes and the other starts, I think it would be important to have good data in SPMS to really have a differentiated profile in the market in the future.
Okay, got it. Yeah, appreciate the color, Andreas. And then just one last question, and then I'll hop back in the queue. Maybe if you could just provide an update on where you are with partnering discussions and current thoughts around partnering.
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think, as we said before, we are going forward here to start phase three, and we will continue executing on phase three. But of course, we are open-minded people, and of course, we will continue discussing with potential partners on this indication. But just to remind everybody, we are also going forward in our second lead indication in ulcerative colitis, where we expect data in the first half of next year. And also our second molecule, 95, will soon start treating psoriasis patients. We're also there, some discussions ongoing. So I think we have the good situation that we can balance things in the right fashion within the company and our portfolio.
Okay, got it. Thanks, guys, for the updates, and congrats on the progress.
The next question comes from Zegba Jala from Roth Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. And, of course, congrats on all the progress. I think I just have a few clarifying questions. The first of which is just that we know the phase two was successful. So I was just wondering if there are any differences in the enrollment criteria between the phase two and the phase three ENSURE studies.
Very little, to be honest, but yes, there are a few that was requested by regulatory agencies. Other than that, I think it's relatively similar in terms of, for example, the number of relapses that are expected to be eligible for this trial. I think the only thing that we have done in the phase two trial a little bit different is that when we focused on MRI activity in the phase two trial, we actually had a requirement to have shown a gadolinium lesion before the subject was eligible for this trial to ensure that we have enough MRI activity. But I think this was very specific because this was a primary endpoint MRI. Other than that, I think they are very similar with very few differences between the phase two and phase three trial.
Thanks, Daniel. That's good. And then just another follow-up question on the powering of the study, and this is specifically for CALIPER. With the neurofilament analysis being quite novel, you know, how confident are you in the powering, and are you likely to need some additional patients?
So I may have to ask back to explain a little bit. Maybe you talk about the interim analysis in CALIPER and how confident we are in what. So then I missed it a little bit, maybe.
Oh, in the powering of it, since it's, you know, such a novel analysis, and you can't really look at a lot of historical stuff to kind of support your powering of it.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. So, I think you're absolutely correct. I think we don't have a lot of historical examples here, and for the neurofilament in these progressive MS populations. However, I think what we have seen is that in this phase two trial, we had a very clear and very substantial response in neurofilament, which I think really, I think in the magnitude that it was also unexpected given data from other oral drugs. So we believe that this provided maybe a good biomarker to really, I think, also see that, like I said before, maybe between the different types of progressive MS, you see whether we have the right mix, for example, of patients in this trial, and the interim analysis actually allows us to change the mix of the patients in this trial. And neurofilament, we believe, is a good biomarker and mechanism to adjust this patient mix. Yes, because you're a little bit depending on the sites in terms of what types of progressive patients they enroll. But I think this is also the intention of the trial to really have this mix of progressive MS patients and better understand
the different populations and where I think we can show the most benefits for the progressive MS patients down the road.
Thank you again. And then the other one I have here is just on the INSURE studies, you noted having patients treated by the second half of the year and data by the end of 2024. I was just wondering how many sites you have activated or that you've accessed for feasibility. And then given multiple drugs for MS, how are you working on messaging with the clinical sites to position the trial? You know, are you thinking that patients that are going to be enrolled are likely those that are looking for safer options, more convenient treatments, or more efficacious treatments?
So in terms of sites activated and green-lighted, ready to recruit, we have zero, yes? And the reason is, of course, this is the first regulatory approval from the FDA. And also, I think we had also expected and received some of the comments from the FDA before they given us the May proceed letter here, yes, because and I explained a little bit that we didn't have an end of phase two meeting, so it was a little bit a more unusual process to get to an active IND here. And so we got a lot of the comments on the FDA basically shortly before the finish line, which makes preparation of the site a little bit more difficult. But we now have basically the understanding what the how the INSURE studies will look like from the FDA and the FDA, the IND clearance. So we'll focus more on activating these sites. But we have identified basically almost all of the sites that didn't participate in the INSURE trial already. We have selected these sites already. So, and like I said, we also have done some trial balloons in terms of submitting actually sites to ETs and ethics committees and IRBs, and have received very encouraging feedback or even approvals on the previous version of the protocol, so that we are reasonably sure that we can activate these sites now in due course. And in terms of how do we select the sites and why they participating, I think very clearly I think we have to say that the sites that are participating, they provide patients to these INSURE trials because patients in these sites, in these countries or in these regions may not have the full scale of therapeutic options available to them, or they're expensive, or in the U.S., for example, they lack the proper health insurance to afford these long-term treatments that are relatively expensive. That was also, I think, a very important point here, by including this very long-term, 8-year open-label treatment option for patients, I think is one of the things that makes this study very attractive for patients in this resource-restricted situations, so that they're willing to participate in a study that has a potentially 15 months placebo control. However, we have also, I think, shown to all of the ethics committees now the newest data on the natural history of MS. Yes, and there's, for example, a patient organization that did a survey of patients in Europe, where there's close to 40% of patients in Europe do decline options for any treatment initially in MS because they look at these options and they're unsatisfied with the safety profile or with the profile of these drugs, but what they have to do and how they interfere with their life. And initially, so almost 40% of the patients do not go on treatment. So these also would be potential patients that would go into this trial, because I think what we have shown in terms of the safety and tolerance profile of this drug that is similar to placebo or identical to placebo in almost all of the categories. And really, I think, and with the, but also Daniel had shown that all of the safety concerns that other drugs have, I think, for the oral MS medications, that for what we know now, I think have very few, if any, of these safety concerns. I think this is also an attractive option for those patients that have initially declined treatment. But I think this is all, I think, where we are going to find these patients. And from what we have seen in the feasibility with these sites, We are confident that this is not a problem to recruit these patients.
Thank you. Thanks, Daniel. And I'm just going to combine my last two questions here and hop off. I think the first is just about your interactions with the EMA. Perhaps I missed it, but can you comment on that and conversations today? And then lastly, if you decide to pursue approval for the treatment of progressive MS based on promising data from CALIPER, would you also need two phase three trials, or because CALIPER is quite large, you might just need a single phase three trial?
Very good questions. I may start with the last one. I wrote down the first one, so now this time I don't forget it. So the CALIPER study, and how do we get approval in SPMS? So I think this CALIPER study, like I said now repeatedly, it's also done deliberately with different subpopulations of the primary, of progressive MS, primary and also secondary progressive MS, which I think enables also a little bit the planning of a future phase three in secondary progressive or in primary progressive or basically in all of the forms of progressive MS. And I think given how few options are available for these patients in progressive MS, I think you can speculate that there might be a way to have just one pivotal trial that really depends on the strength of the CALIPER data in this patient population. I think that would be crucial, I think. I think to see whether one phase three study is enough. But of course, for that indication, we have not had the regulatory interactions yet to discuss this. So my statements are probably a little bit uninformed and more speculative. In terms of EMA interactions, yes. So we had the quite usual end of phase two process with the EMA, where we had previously had some interactions even before that with several of the European national regulatory bodies that lead the EMA usually when it comes to MS. And now we also had a written response from EMA, as well as we had an actual meeting, face-to-face of course not, but by video conference nowadays, a meeting with the EMA. So this was quite a robust and lengthy end of phase two process in the manner that you would usually have it after a phase two study and starting a large phase three trial. And to be quite honest, I think we believe that these two have talked to each other because their feedback is almost identical. So I think it was very helpful to go through the EMA process, even so we didn't have a end of phase two meeting with the FDA.
Thanks, Daniel. And again, congrats on all the progress, including the update on 935.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Matt Kaplan from Ladenburg Thalmann. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the questions. Just, I guess, a follow-up on the CALIPER study. Given the primary endpoint in a phase three trial is typically, I guess, confirmed disability progression for progressive MS. What are your thoughts on being able to impact disability progression, EDSS, in the CALIPER study, and what are you looking forward to see there? And then maybe start with that, and then I have a question on the INSURE program as well.
No. Thank you very much, Matt, for the question, and thanks for being here. So the CALIPER study is powered for the primary endpoint, which is brain atrophy. Yeah, so I have to make that statement that we have the analysis as a key secondary analysis for disability progression or disability worsening, which I think, given the uncertainty of the different types of progressive MS and what you will see, I think it's probably hard to plan for what the likelihood of hitting a statistical analysis or significance is here. But however, I think this is a phase two study, and given that I think you have seen the data that brain atrophy and disability progression usually correlate quite well, while of course these disability worsening events are rare, I think showing statistical significance in brain atrophy, of course, will guide, I think, the planning of the phase three, where you are absolutely correct, likely would have to power for disability worsening. Yes, and like I said, for the ENSURE study, we actually pool ENSURE studies in a pre-planned analysis, and we have discussed this with regulators also quite rigorously that we can do this if it's pre-planned. And we actually expect that we need to pool both ENSURE studies to have a meaningful statistical analysis of disability worsening.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then with the ENSURE program, just your thoughts on using the primary endpoint of time to first relapse rather than ARR, annualized relapse, as your primary, and your thoughts of that study design and why you went that direction.
Yeah, so I think there are several things. First of all, I think regulators have opened the door a few years ago. The EMA, of course, has a guidance on the net where actually time to first relapse is now named as one of the possible relapse-related endpoints. The FDA doesn't have a specific guidance on MS, but I think the FDA also had a workshop on MS a few years ago where it was presented that ARR and also time to first relapse is both our endpoints that we would accept for phase three trials. The rethinking for the regulators came a little bit because it is known that the relapse rate in MS patients in general, independent of trials, or even in trials, of course, have really diminished over the last 20 years. And we see a very steady decline of ARR rates. Yes, so if you run a trial in the mid-90s, the first MS trials, you would have an ARR rate of 1.2 or something. So almost more than each patient a year had a relapse. Now I think we're at 0.4, 0.35 for patients receiving placebo. So it becomes more and more of a problem to use ARR in this setting when you have these very low ARR rates. So and that's, therefore, I think you opened up the possibility of time to event analysis or time to relapse analysis by the regulators, because it is a much more meaningful analysis if you have these low rates of relapses that you know now. And of course, it just allows you to do these trials in a meaningful size without having to ensure that you have these very high relapse rates, phase relapse rates, which we don't have anymore. So that's really, I think, the progression of the relapse endpoints that happened over the last years with the regulators based on the differences of observed relapse rates.
All right. Thank you for the detail and congrats on the progress.
Thanks, Matt.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Daniel Vitt for any closing remarks.
Yeah, I would like to thank everybody for dialing in today, and I hope you also enjoyed and share our excitement regarding way forward here. Stay tuned. I think there's more news to come in several weeks, so it's a quite active time here in the company. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.